B-Pod Studios.
Ready, set, go!
This is Checkpoint XP Daily, your daily dose of esports and video game discussion. A complete look at all things esports and gaming. A production of Beasley Esports XP. Here are your hosts, Nate Bender, Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan.
Checkpoint reached.
Hey, welcome to Checkpoint XP Daily for Thursday, July 25th, 2019. Your home for esports and gaming. Want to thank everyone listening on WWKB 1520 in Buffalo and ESPN Radio 97.7, 100.1, and 1200 AM in Syracuse, New York. Coming up today on Checkpoint XP Daily, could Disney be making a buy into the video game world? Plus, we've got to talk about this new GTA Online casino. This is just an amazing piece of satire.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those conversations are ahead here today on Checkpoint XP Daily. But we start today with an interview with Tommy Tallarico.
A legend.
Joe got to go out to Video Games Live where he got to meet Tommy Tallarico.
Hey guys, this is Joe with Checkpoint XP. I am at the Detroit Symphony Orchestra at the Max M. Fisher Theater, and I am joined now by a legend of the video game industry. You may know him as the composer of Earthworm Jim. You may know him as the creator of Video Games Live. You may know him as one of the first people to ever release a video game album. Tommy Tallarico is our guest here. Tommy, welcome to Checkpoint XP.
Where is he? I don't see him. Oh, that's me. That's me. Yes. Wow, I sound busy.
Yes.
That's where actually what I wanted to start is you have had your hands in just about every facet of the gaming industry, whether it be Earthworm Jim, whether it be G4, whether it be a list, any number of things. Where do you find the time, first of all?
Well, you know what it is I love what I do. I'm passionate about video games, and it's consumed my entire life, both as a child and growing up in the 70s and 80s, and into my adulthood and my career. And of course, yeah, you mentioned, you know, the video game composer and sound designer on games like Earthworm Jim and Tony Hawk and Metroid and all these great. I was part of the original Guitar Hero, worked on that, some stuff, all these things. And then, of course, you mentioned G4. But even before G4, though, we had started a TV show called The Electric Playground. In 1994, we started that. And it was the longest-running video game TV show ever. And I was on that for 12 years, and we broke that off and did another show called Reviews on the Run, or in the U.S. was known as Judgment Day. So I was doing two weekly half-hour TV shows that we would film up in Vancouver. So I'd spend 1 week every month, and I did that for 12 years, creating shows. Plus, I was working on anywhere from 20 to 30 video game soundtracks and sound design a year. And then I started a nonprofit organization called the Game Audio Network Guild in 2002, which now has over 2,500 members worldwide in over 50 countries. And then that same year is when I started Video Games Live in 2002. And then when I started touring the show, when the show really kind of exploded, I had to stop doing the TV show in 2007 about then. So I was at one time doing all those things. I have four major companies and four major things all going on at once. But now I'm the CEO and president of Intellivision. So if all that other stuff wasn't enough, it's like, yeah, I want to do a video game console now. And so that's what we're doing. We're coming out with the Intellivision Amico next year, 10/10/2020. I've been working on it for a couple of years. I have an amazing team. We have over 300 people, working on it and bringing it to the market. And again, it's all about passion.
Well, and I'd actually like to take a moment on the Intellivision Amico. talk about an announcement no one was expecting to hear last year when that announcement came to life. How did that come about? Were you an Intellivision fan growing up? How did that all come about?
Yeah, so my system growing up was Intellivision. Back in the late 70s, you either had an Intellivision or an Atari if you were into video games, right? And 80% of the market was Atari, right? Atari was the, you know, the winner of, you know, they came out in 1977 and they were a little less. Intellivision was the better machine, technically, but it was more expensive, and it came out in 1979, so a couple years later. And so, but yeah, we held 20% of the video game market by the early 80s. We were doing $500 million a year back then. That's the equivalent of $1.4 billion this year. We had 1,800 employees worldwide, and it's crazy. We even still have four people at the company who started in 1980. So yeah, so this isn't like some company that's been like, you know, traded a bunch of gazillion times. There's actually still the heart and soul of the company is still there, and they're still pissed at Atari. They still don't. Still rivals. But and that was my system growing up. That was when I think of video games when I was a kid. That's what I think about playing with my mom and my dad and my younger brother. And that's really the whole lifeblood, life force behind Amico, behind the new system, is that we're all about simple, affordable, family entertainment. That's where that spells out safe.
Yeah.
And so there's no violent games on the machine at all. There's no, you know, bad language or blood or any of that. It's all family friendly content. That doesn't mean it's a bunch of kiddie stuff.
Right.
Not at all. I mean, 90% of most video games are not rated M, mature, you know. It's just as you always hear about those ones. But
think about the Wii, which was one of the most successful systems of all time, and it would fall into much that same category.
Exactly. The Wii was the third biggest home console of all time, 102 million units sold, generated $50 billion in revenue. But the reality is that about over 35% of the people who purchased a Wii for $249 never bought another game for it. Because Nintendo's whole thing was, you know, they weren't trying to create games for my mom. Like, my mom bought a Wii so she could play bowling, right? And so a lot of people were like, hey, do a bowling game, do shuffleboard, do horseshoes, do all card games and all these casual games, because this is before mobile, right? And Nintendo, you know, they do what they do. They're a great company. They're a $40 billion a year company because they're smart and they know how to cater to their audience. Their audience, though, are, you know, millennials who grew up on Pokemon, Mario, and Zelda. So when the Wii came out, they went right back to their wheelhouse. You know, they did Pikmin and Metroid Prime, a game I worked on with Miyamoto for 5 years, Smash Brothers and Zelda and Pokemon and Mario and this and that. So, you know, and then of course, mobile, and the Wii was 13 years ago. Oh, yeah. Amazing. Doesn't seem like that long ago. It's crazy. And then when mobile kind of took over. Mobile dominates the video game industry. Video game industry last year did $140 billion. 55% of that was mobile games. 25% of it was home consoles, and about 20% of it is PC and Mac. And so those are the three factions, right? And so mobile is doubling and almost tripling what those other two categories are doing. That says a lot, right? People want... There's 200 million hardcore gamers in the world, but 3 billion people who play casual games every day. And so that's what we're doing. What we're doing is we're bringing video games back to families and friends, couch co-op, playing in a room together no matter what your skill level is. Because that was one of the things that the Wii did with Wii Bowling, right? With Wii Sports. That was a beautiful thing. Nursing homes were buying the damn thing, right? And so, but Nintendo or any other company has never really followed up with that. The Wii U certainly was that. That was the exact opposite direction, where it was a single-player machine. You wanted a second controller for the Wii U? It was $179, right? You know how many two-player games there were for the Wii U?
Not many.
How about zero.
Oh.
Yeah, so you know, that's it. And you know, the Switch is a great machine as well. And I don't want to seem like I'm coming across, because I'm a big fan of all these companies. But there's this huge gaping hole in the industry, which is I want games that are simple. I want them affordable, and I want them for family and friends to play together. And that is not happening in the video game industry, and it hasn't since the Wii. And that's the gap. That's the hole. That's our lane that in television is going to stay in. The machine's $179. Every game is $9.99 or less. It's a game system that comes with two controllers. It's the first video game system in 30 years to do that. And you can download a free app and connect up to 8 mobile devices right to the machine out of the box. So you want to play 8-player co-op right out of the box, doesn't cost you a dime. And so that's the thing, is that, and the system itself has 5 games built into it as well.
That's incredible. You know, you mentioned, you know, growing up, it was Atari versus Intellivision. I went through very much the same thing, Genesis versus Super Nintendo. And I was a Genesis kid, which meant that I had Earthworm Jim and I Groovy. And I have to ask about it, because I feel like you came into a composing video games at a fascinating time to get into that, because we were moving out of the 8-bit era and all of a sudden we can do a lot more with sound in video games. What was it like making music for video games in the 90s?
Yeah. So, I mean, I actually started in the 8-bit era. My first games that I worked on audio was the NES and the Game Boy. The first game I ever did was the Prince of Persia, the original one with Jordan Mechner. But yeah, Earthworm Jim was around 1993-94, and it was amazing. Because before that you only had four monophonic voices that you could work with the NES and the Game Boy. It was basically the same sound chip. And one of those voices, one of those four, was just a white noise channel. You know, it's like, oh, it sounds like a drum. Or whatever, you know. So you really only had 3 melodic channels. When the Genesis hit the scene, now you had 6, and they were FM synthesis. And I always liked the Genesis better than the Super Nintendo. Had more sports games, which I liked. But I liked the sound chip. It was beefier. It was deeper, you know.
You can recognize Genesis music when you hear it from a mile away. It sounded so unique for its time.
Absolutely. It was like having a big, beefy Yamaha synth. That's what the chip was. It was the same chip as a very popular synth in the 80s called the DX7. Very popular synth that a lot of people worked. And that was basically the chip that was in there. And so not only did we have 6 channels of that, but we also had those 4 other channels that the other systems had, which not a lot of people use, but I always did. And then, so we had 10 channels, but then one of those channels could also be used as a sample channel. So that's how you got Sega at the beginning of, you know, Sonic, but people would only use it for that. They would only use it to like do like Sega or fight or go win, you know, because memory, it took up a lot to have a sample like that. It was way more than any graphics or programming. The sound took up most of those cartridges back then. And so everyone, you know, so what I had done is I had figured out a way to where I could do a lot of samples, a lot of those things in a small amount of space. It was like a secret that I'd figured out. And so like you look at a game like Earthworm Jim or Global Gladiators or Cool Spot or any of those games I did back then for the Genesis, Terminator, and there's a ton of samples in there. And so I had a completely unfair advantage over everyone else because I would use it for everything. I would use it for guitar hits and drum snares and explosion sounds and to really thrash the hell out of that sound chip, because we would use priorities. So every time like a sample would happen, you know, something important would happen, it would step on one of the other voices. So even though I only had 6 voices, I was writing music for like 8 or 10 channels. It's just, and I would prioritize things so that you would hear it, you know, you would hear different things at different times. And then when the sound design came in, even though sample channels and other channels were dropping out, you never really heard it because that big sound effect or that big guitar solo or whatever was masking the fact that, hey, the kick drum isn't even there anymore, but you never even realized it.
All right, so I got to get your thoughts on this. Obviously, we're here for Video Games Live. This is your baby. It came at a time when I feel like the greater music industry would have laughed at the idea of it. And over the last 15 years, you have been proven so right about the potential of video game music. And I just got to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, that was the thing. When I first started Video Games Live, everybody thought I was completely nuts. You know, they're like, yeah, look, people who go to a symphony don't play video games. And, you know, they're old people. And people who play video games, well, they certainly don't go to a symphony, so you're totally screwed. No one's going to show up to your dumb thing. And I did the first show at the Hollywood Bowl with the LA Philharmonic Orchestra. Spent millions of dollars. Basically, every dollar I had earned in the video game industry, I put into that show, and people thought I was nuts. They're like, you're risking everything you've worked your whole career for, and you're throwing it all away. You're lucky if 500 people show up. And 11,000 people showed up, and all of a sudden, I wasn't so crazy. And here we are tonight in Detroit, Michigan, with the amazing, wait till you hear this, Detroit Symphony. They're unbelievable. One of the best in the country, actually. And I don't say that every city you go. No, we don't. Detroit Symphony is definitely in the top five in the United States. Really, they're that good. And you'll hear it tonight. You'll be like, damn, he was right. But here we are tonight, and this is show number 497 tonight. And that's a couple years ago, we got the Guinness World Record for the long. So not only is it been a long running show and popular all over the world, but also we own the Guinness World Record for the symphony show that has done more performances than any other symphony show ever, symphony tour ever. 497 shows. So you're all part of the Guinness World Record tonight until we play in 2 days, and then you won't be. But tonight we'll all celebrate together. And so that's been pretty amazing. And, really my goal for creating the show was not only did I want to prove to the world how culturally significant and artistic video games had become, but I also wanted to help usher in a whole new generation of young people to appreciate the orchestra, to appreciate the arts and symphonic music. And I think that's one of the incredible things. We've played to over 2.5 million people. We have all, 6 albums that came out. Every single one of them debuted on the top 10 charts of Billboard. We did a big PBS special in 2010, over 90 million households. I think that was a big turning point for when video game music went from, everyone thinking it was like non-gamers thinking it was non-legitimate to it becoming legitimate. PBS is a huge, like that's Pavarotti, the three tenors and you name it, Sarah Brightman, whatever, that's like the real deal. And here we are, and they've done over 4,000 PBS concerts since over the last 50 years. We were ranked number 8 of all time. So again, right up there with Elton John and the freaking Paul McCartney, and like, it's unbelievable to think, how that, affected so many people and who don't even play video games. They saw it as something that was beautiful and everything. So, but the amazing thing is you look in the audience tonight. We do a lot of market research, and about 70% of the audience have never seen an orchestra live. This will be the first time they're seeing an orchestra. And think about this for a second. Video Games Live, the first time ever where millions of young people in the history of music, in the history of the universe, that's the first time where millions of young people are standing in line to see an orchestra. They didn't even do that in the time of Beethoven, right? Beethoven's a bunch of old white people going to the symphony. Well, guess what? 300 years later, the shit hasn't changed that much. It's still a bunch of old white people. But Video Games Live is young people, Even when you go to something like the Harry Potter and the Star Wars shows or whatever, it's family stuff, but here, it's young people, millennials and younger. That's who you'll see in the audience. But you'll also see the grandparents bringing their grandkids. You'll see the mom bringing the neighborhood friends together. That's a beautiful thing. And they are the ones we get the best letters from. They'll be like, oh my God, I never knew. Like the video game music was this incredible. And the graphics are so amazing. And the storylines and the characters. I get it now. Now I know why my kids are so much into video games. Thank you so much for opening my eyes. And it's that same kind of sensibility that I want to bring into television as well, right? Whereas, you don't have to be a gamer to enjoy and love video games and play together as a family, So that's the goal.
He's the president and CEO of Intellivision, a composer of video games you love, and a legend in the gaming industry. Tommy Tallarico has been our guest here today on Checkpoint XP. Tommy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much for having me, and let me know anytime. Come back, and we'll talk about Intellivision when it comes out next year.
Looking forward to it.
Thanks again to Tommy Tallarico for his time, and make sure you check out Video Games Live if they're coming to your city at videogameslive.com. For full interviews, make sure you check out our own website over at checkpointxp.com. Still ahead on Checkpoint XP Daily, we've got to talk about the GTA Online Casino that they've just added that has, by the way, already been banned in 50 countries. That conversation is ahead here on Checkpoint XP. But next, could Disney be making a big play into the video game space?
Okay.
That conversation is ahead next on Checkpoint XP Daily.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
Could Disney be trying to step into the video game space? Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. I want to thank everyone listening on the sports beat of East Texas, 104.3 in Carthage, 103.9 in Marshall, and 100.7 in Henderson, as well as 1250 and 94.5 ESPN San Antonio. Checkpoint XP Daily is now a part of the Bpod Network at bpodstudios.com. For more great listening options like Inside the Ropes, a weekly look inside wrestling in the WWE, and Talkin' Rock with Meltdown, an interview and music news podcast, then go over to bpodstudios.com, the place to be for podcast discovery. So I keep seeing headlines about Disney wanting to make a play into the video game space.
Yeah.
Now, it started with like one headline maybe 2 weeks ago, but I've seen now like six within the last 2 days.
Yeah, they already freaking own everything.
It makes me think that there's actually some traction to this rumor.
Yeah, here's the thing. We've not seen anything to the effect of, hey, Disney is actively searching for a company to buy out.
This is rumor.
It was a speculative piece that said, like, hey, what if Disney got involved in the video game space? And then over the course of the last 2 weeks, that snowballed into like 10 more pieces, all saying like, well, if they did get involved in the space, this is who they'd go after.
Well, listen,
and it's just got me kind of thinking about it, because how the heck is Disney not already running their own gaming company?
I mean, the thing is, they had Disney Interactive for a number of years, right?
Right.
And that, you know, that was essentially
not fantastic.
Their games division, it eventually did shutter in 2016. It actually had to be rebooted, and then it shut down again.
Right.
But ultimately, after 2016 is when it was officially closed. And here's the thing. First of all, I think obviously them purchasing Marvel and MCU and all that stuff, I mean, that's a big purchase, as well as 20th Century Fox.
Which is a $70 billion deal,
they've
I think.
Spent a lot of money.
Yes, they have.
And so, you know, the money that I think they'd be seeing much more of a return on the investment much quicker. You know, by having the MCU and being able to have a lot of those properties, I think they're able to deploy what can begin to make them some of that money back fairly quickly. I think with video games, and as we've been seeing with video games that are based off other IPs, that does not necessarily guarantee anymore that your game is loved.
Here's the thing, though. I'm starting to see a familiar pattern emerge in the way that Disney does things, right? They do something well. They start farming it out to other people to make a lot of money off it. And then once there is a ravenous audience for it, they pull back all their IPs and do it themselves and make all of the dollars.
Right.
So here's what I'm seeing now. They have farmed out things like their Marvel IP. They have farmed out the Star Wars IP. They have created
Kingdom Hearts.
At least for Marvel, they've got a rather ravenous fan base. I don't know how the Star Wars IP is doing in that. But could they then yank those back is when that when those IP deals expire and do it themselves.
I think what the more logical play here is for them, because they don't have in-house game development talent.
Exactly.
They've got a lot of animation talent. Sure. They've got a lot of, you know, and there
sound
is
design.
Sound design, and yeah, there's overlap in skills.
But you're alluding to the streaming stuff. I think the only reason that happens is because they know they can do it better. I don't know that they can do video games better.
Yeah, they do not fundamentally have a game development staff. So what I think is much more likely, and the play that makes the most sense to me, is to take an ailing studio that is already producing games, buy it, and call that Disney Games.
Yep. Okay, well, that opens up the question then, if you're Disney, and you we've seen from the Fox acquisition, your check is basically limitless.
Yeah.
Who do you
anybody
go after?
Anybody we want. All of them, if we feel like it. But
To your earlier point, though, Norris, like when you look at the acquisition of like Fox, right? Mm-hmm. Like they own so many IPs, it shouldn't be long before they're able to start bringing that back in, right? But even if we look at Electronic Arts, Activision Blizzard, or like Square Enix, all of those are looking at around like a $25 to $30 billion value. So that's already half of what the Fox deal would have cost.
Yeah.
But how quickly are you going to be able to make that back on games,
though?
There
you go. There's really only two of those studios that can make that money back, and that's ActiBliz and EA.
Because of microtransactions, but because of what's happening in the government right now, that might be not be as feasible going forward.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're currently talking about whether or not whether or not Disney could be making a play into the video game world, maybe even, you know, buying up a bigger studio like EA. And, you know, well, Activision Blizzard also seems like an interesting target in that discussion, considering how much trouble they've been having recently.
But let me tell you why it would make sense, because if they went out and purchased ActiBliz, you already have the whole esports apparatus that's been built up. EA,
sure,
for their IPs, has really kind of only done it with FIFA and Madden, and those are not big draws in the same way that Overwatch League or Call of Duty is.
Sure.
So you have that built in. You already have TV deals already set up in place with your ESPN brands. So now you bring that in. That's all in-house. And now that's not money spent. You're paying yourself, essentially. So you have an entire ecosystem that could be built up around not just Overwatch, but all of those esports properties. And you create one synergistic brand that now is unstoppable.
Norris, that's a fascinating point, because you're right, they own ESPN. So if they purchase Activision Blizzard and get the rights to Overwatch under their banner, that could be a power play.
That would be intense.
Here goes your Overwatch TV series or whatever, your Overwatch Disney Plus series.
Disney Plus has an Overwatch
series,
yeah.
There's your Overwatch movie. There's whatever they want to do with Call of Duty. They could just throw a Call of Duty movie out there.
It's about more than just the games at that point. That makes a lot more sense.
Yes, that's the only way Disney would approach it, because I think if they got involved in the game space, there's no way that they would do it and leave all that money left on the table.
Well, let's also not ignore the fact that Disney now has properties that are worth making video games of. You know, when they were churning out the animation classics that they were doing, I don't know how many of those make for awesome video games.
Right.
You know what I mean?
The Lion King did.
I understand that there were a couple of good Super Nintendo and Genesis games that were in there.
In the age of side-scrolling platformers, it was doable.
But here's the thing, is that, you know, things like X-Men or Avengers, all of the Marvel properties, everything that they picked up with Star Wars, these are properties that don't know a life without video games, right? Right. Like, you can have Frozen be a movie and not ever make a video game out of it, right? But you can't make Star Wars and not make Star Wars video games. So I think that also changes the calculus and the calculation here, because now they have a bunch of properties that they own that are worth making video games about, and I think that justifies looking at purchasing a game studio much more seriously.
What if they made a merger with Tencent? What if
don't even say those. Don't even be the biggest, most powerful company on the planet.
That would have to be like a global antitrust like alert that would go off.
Yeah, that would be a hydra that no one would be able to defeat after that. Listen, we want to hear from you. Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint _ XP on Instagram. Coming up next on Checkpoint XP Daily, we've got to talk about the GTA Online Casino, because guess what? There's already some countries that will never see this content. Stick around. That conversation is ahead next here on Checkpoint XP Daily.
Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
This is Checkpoint XP, esports and gaming radio. CheckpointXP.com.
The latest addition to Grand Theft Auto Online is not playable in 50 countries.
Oh my God.
Welcome back to Checkpoint XP, your home for esports and gaming. My name is Dave Bender. So glad to have you along. I want to thank everyone listening on ESPN Central Texas, KZRI and KTON in Waco, Texas, as well as ESPN 97.5 in Houston and the Horn 104.9 in Austin, Texas. You've been asking for it and it's finally here. Checkpoint XP merch is officially available. We've got shirts, hats, hoodies, and mugs for Checkpoint XP, Not Your Player 2, and Load Team Damage. Check it out over at checkpointxp.com/shop. The latest addition to Grand Theft Auto Online is definitely raising some eyebrows, especially about those who are extremely hawkish about microtransactions and loot boxes.
Yeah, so for a little bit of context, ever since GTA Online started, there has been the Diamond Casino with a sign in front of it that says opening soon. Well, that sign is no longer there because the Diamond Casino has officially opened in Vinewood. Here's the issue is not only can you, of course, gamble in the casino.
Of course.
With your digital money.
Yeah, but you can also purchase more digital money with real money, effectively meaning you can gamble real money in the casino, not against other people.
Right.
Just against the house. Just against the house. Exactly. And so effectively, yeah, you can gamble money in this casino to acquire in-game cosmetics and items.
Can you pull out that money?
You cannot.
Okay.
So it's a one-way street.
Yeah, once you give them your money, that's it. You're just paying to play.
Let me understand this right.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So you can give them your actual money.
Yeah, correct.
Play a game of chance.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yep, that's right.
And then win a digital item out of that game of chance.
Specifically digital money.
The money to go buy digital items.
Yeah. Okay.
That's correct.
It gives you the option where you can either, you know, insert your dollars into the front of your system, not literally people, just figuratively.
Yeah, exactly.
Where you can, you know, put in your own money and go and buy those cosmetics if you want to.
Right.
Or you can use that money to try to gamble to win more of that money to go then buy those cosmetics.
Yeah, yeah. The idea being that you can either buy the item you want for a certain amount of money, or for a lesser amount of money, you could try to win the item that you want. And if that sounds incredibly familiar to you, it's because we've been doing this story for the past 2 years.
Yeah, just sounds like loot boxes.
Yeah, doesn't it, though?
Yeah, it does. Yeah. You know what? It sounds like loot boxes with extra steps.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least it's kind of a game of skill at that point, kind of.
You can,
is it, though?
As much as going to a casino is.
But you can lose.
Yeah.
You can lose your own money.
Yeah.
Not just get it converted into digital dollars and lose it, but then you lose it as in it goes into the ether.
Actually, yeah. It goes into Rockstar's pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The ether,
literally,
sure.
To the accounting department.
Yes, you're right. We do know where it ultimately ends up going. But doesn't this seem insane? Like, it seems like someone took, like, okay, let's do loot boxes, but make it even more crazy. Yep.
And that's why, to me, this doesn't sound like something that is a cash grab per se from Rockstar. I think this is a satire on all of loot boxes and microtransactions.
Well, it's so easy to make money in Grand Theft Auto to begin with.
It's the best kind of satire. It's the kind of satire that also makes you a buttload of money.
Yeah, yes. Absolutely. And that's the thing, is already 50 countries do not have access to this. Now, as far as we can tell, that's because Rockstar has chosen not to put it in those
countries.
Which,
again,
correct,
to me, plays more, even more into the fact that this is a satire. This is them saying, hey, do you want to know what would be really stupid? If you guys spent your real money to go spend fake money to go win fake things.
Well, and the best, worst part about it is the people in these countries who don't have access to it, who can't buy and play, are upset about it.
Of course they are.
Yeah.
Of course they are.
I think they should have went. They should have went all the way. And I don't think when everyone loaded up and walked into it, I don't think anyone should have had access to it. It should have said, no matter what country you're in, and everybody everywhere would have been so upset that they couldn't just give their money to Rockstar. And that would have so perfectly illustrated that the real people who are at fault for all of this microtransaction and loot box and DLC stuff, it's us.
Yep. I've seen the enemy, and he is us.
Well,
but the thing
we already knew that.
But the part that I find to be so cool about this is that this is win-win for Rockstar, honestly.
Sure.
Because if they do it the way they did it, which was limited release, you got people clamoring for it and using VPNs to circumvent the geo-lock,
right,
and go and do it anyway. And then you have other, if they did it the other way and just released it to everybody, then you had a lengthy court case, and that's infamous, with GTA is no stranger to being.
Sure.
So no matter what they would have done, GTA would have won out, got boatloads of money, and continued to breathe life into this freaking game.
You're listening to Checkpoint XP Esports and Gaming Radio. We're currently talking about GTA Online's edition of the casino and whether or not it's satire, whether it should be taken at face value. And I accept that reading. And by the way, everything from us is all speculation. We don't really know whether or not this was intended to be satire or not. But I'm going to put forward an alternate theory, Norris. I'm going to say 2K came down from on high and said, you've got to figure out how to monetize your game better, because all of this GTA Online stuff is great, but you need to be making more money. They got all of this prepped and ready to go. Court cases started falling down, and they were just like, well, we've already started down this road. Why not keep going?
Dude, if I'm them, that's the stupidest thing. You've already made the most profitable single piece of entertainment ever in the history of Everdom.
Listen.
And I get it. I know how greed works.
Yeah.
We just
need money.
That's right. What are the goals? I don't know. More. That's the goal. So I understand it, but I don't think this is something that necessarily came from on high. I think they realized
I'm just theorizing.
No, I know. Yeah. I'm just saying, I think they had a way to continue to monetize this game, breathe more life into it, and keep it alive for another 2 years, and then said, you know what? Let's also make it really stupid.
I just think labeling it satire gives it a benefit of the doubt that I don't know that I'm willing to give any AAA developer in 2019.
That's fair. It's
a gold rush for everyone. And I could not listen, if 2K wanted to get in on that, I'm not going to be surprised if that is. I'm going to be disappointed. I'm not going to be surprised, though.
For me, the only way to top it at this point is after backlash ends up happening, then you shut the casino down, saying due to backlash, the Diamond Casino is no more.
Let me get your thoughts on this.
Yep, no refunds.
Let me get your thoughts on this. So they also made a website to go along with the casino. And it says, a luxury casino and resort in the heart of Vinewood. You've heard the rumors. You want to believe them. And then there's only one way to find out. Abandon your preconceptions. Let go of your inhibitions, your doubts, your sense of proportion, your credit rating. The rumors didn't begin to do it justice. Welcome to the Diamond. And it's literally a full-on website going over all their amenities and everything they offer. That's pretty impressive.
I love, like, that's a nice little touch right there. And you know, I think there's a case that you can argue that it is satire, but it could also be a cash grab. It could be both things.
It's both.
We want to hear from you, Have you checked out the Diamond Casino and GTA Online? What do you think about it? Connect with us on social media. That's Checkpoint XP on Facebook and Twitter, and Checkpoint underscore XP on Instagram. Thanks for joining us for Checkpoint XP Daily, the first internationally syndicated show on esports and gaming for radio. Visit our website, checkpointxp.com, for insight on esports and gaming, as well as a full archive of episodes, podcasts, and interviews. Join us Monday through Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern at twitch.tv/CheckpointXP. Our theme is provided by the band Weird At Last. Find more at weirdatlast.com. Checkpoint XP Daily is a production of Beasley Esports XP. Lead segment producing by Joe Sloan. Producing and booking help from Christine Solis. And of course, my co-hosts who pull double duty as producers for Checkpoint XP Daily: Robbie Landis, Norris Howard, and Joe Sloan. My name's Nate Bender. Keep listening.
You've been listening to Checkpoint XP, a complete look at all things esports and gaming. Check out the latest esports and gaming news and opinions at checkpointxp.com.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.